Okay, hello everybody. Welcome back to Real Proletariat Hours. This is me, Piotr, captain of the Radical Painting and Sculptures Association. How do you do? How do you do? And this is Lewis.
Always great to be here. I am Lewis, comrade director of the People's Device Chair for Podcasting. Always ready to host.
Howdy, howdy. We're having a good day today. It's actually night, so whatever. But still recording anyway. What do we want to do for our first little topic here today of Real Proletariat Hours? Well, maybe we should explain, maybe for a new listener, like what does that mean? What is Real Proletariat? What is a Real Proletariat Hours?
Well, it's an hour of content, right? We have a specific, we go real because, you know, everyone else is fake and we're the only legitimate voice on politics.
Yes, us.
That's not true, but, you know. I think we're
Well,
but I think we're the only ones doing what I think. There's a few scattered, whatever. But we're a kind of very deliberate revolutionary socialist thing. We believe in revolution in our lifetimes. It's possible. We kind of started early a couple episodes ago on a big current event, but we do a mix of current events, like actual down to earth, how to do things, how to prep, how to build, all legally and with due process, you know, and prepare for revolution. And we want to discuss that, you know, how to engage in the power process before the revolution, these kind of things. We also, the big thing we do is we look at the news through the lens of a revolutionary socialist, right? So what's good and bad in terms of a revolution now? Because of what news is, we end up covering electoral politics. We don't believe in electoral politics, but we will obviously kind of have to weigh in, give our voice, you know, give our, what we think.
That's also something.
We kind of consider electoral politics.
Yeah, we kind of consider it kind of dumb and a waste of time. But at the same time, it's one of those, it's like a fun little topic to just throw darts at, right? You know?
Yeah. And you got to fill an hour. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, basically. we got to fill
what
the time somehow.
What you going to do? You know, it's kind of like, you know, politics would be cooler if it was our way, and we want to make it our way.
Yeah, one of
these
days.
But in the meantime, we want to wind up the way it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of these days, you know.
So we were talking about last episode, about the thing that happened up in Richmond, Virginia.
Yes. There was a big Second Amendment protest, and it was a big armed march, a lot of boomers, armed and unarmed. There was a lot of talk on, like, the kind of libertarian, 2A boomer side that it was going to be a, you know, they were going to go hang the governor, they were going to go storm the castle, they were going to do all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The governor declared a state of emergency. The boomers, as it turned out, were like all talk again. You know, they just marched around, milled about with firearms, didn't do nothing, looked generally kind of silly. The best part of the whole thing is that, you know, conservatives are kind of like bad at engaging, like, well, the conservative base, not the conservative establishment, they know how to do it, but like the conservative voter, the kind of right wing boomer voter, they don't really know how to engage in the power process. They kind of like, You see that with a lot of their protesters, like the March for Life, the anti-abortion protests. They kind of LARP as like the 60s civil rights stuff without any of like the kind of...
Wait, is that really what they do? I've never seen those, but...
Yeah, they do like...
Oh, that's very cringy.
They just do the thing. Like they kind of just peacefully protest. They assume they kind of watch the movies Martin Luther King, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they see these people that march down the National Mall and they give a big speech. And they have X number of people, right? Like, the pro-life march gets like a bunch of people. They get like 200,000 a year minimum. Like, they get a load of people. But they think that, like, if you do that enough, if you march enough, you just, like, win, and they pass, like, legislation in your name. That's kind of the same thing they did with Richmond. They had 10,000 or 9,000 people with guns, and they were like, we're gonna stop this, you know? And their whole bit is, like, it's very kind of servile and cringe, because they talk before the event, like, they're gonna go, like, storm the governor's mansion, and they had a guillotine outside. Which, like, that's our bit.
Well, that would be pretty awesome if they actually did that.
Yeah, right. And they adopted some of our aesthetics, which is fine. You know, it's okay. But the thing is, they're so paranoid of being considered like a right wing racist group or a revolutionary thing of any kind. They just come out and say, "Oh, look how behaved we were. Right, we're cleaning up trash. Look at our black friends. Right, they had 20 black people there, and they're like." Put in front of the cameras.
Dude,
it was
every time.
Bro, it's
every time I see that.
It's like if you're so like wrapped in the kind of neoliberal paradigm of right and wrong that when you're said, hey, your protest is like you're a terrorist, you're a racist, you're a whatever. If you should say like, fuck you, don't take my guns away, right? Or like, get mad. If you just say,
yeah,
you're
like you're easily, you're basically being distracted. You're like with something else.
Yeah, it's like you're simpering. Like it's weak. If someone says like, oh, you know, you can't have your guns because you're all racist. No, I have a black friend. They don't. They're not gonna like. Oh, no, wait, guys, don't take the guns away. He's got a black friend. Like, it's retarded. Like,
this is like if like we're asking for better wages for generally, you know, deindustrialization of art and music and such like this. You know, things that we want, and then somebody's like. Well, yeah, but you smell weird.
You know, it's like
you know, you don't shower every day or something, or
you're like, you hate the rich, right? You're like, I have rich friends. You know, it's that's what it is.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
I have tons of wealthy friends. It's like, no, you just like you just say shut the fuck up, or like you just like, or you know, you shoot them. If you were at like a more aggressive, like say, like if you were at, like say the G20 protests back in like early 2000s, and you had and you came with a camera and your Fox News shit. And you're like, y'all are all racist and you hate rich people. They would have smashed your fucking camera. Like,
or they,
that's what they should have done.
Well, see, like...
If they put a...
They would have just said yes.
Oh, yeah, you hit the... Yeah, that too. Like, but you don't obviously get to the racist because it's like, that's like the cardinal sin of kind of post-World War II America. Like, you know, neoliberal order is like, that's the cardinal sin is racism. So you really can't, like, if you're trying to maintain a legitimate platform like they are... Like they're trying to do like a weird, like, it's not reactionary.
Yeah, but it would
but
be
it's
so
like anti-revolutionary politics.
Yeah, well,
it was electoral politics.
It feels like it would be so much easier to just ignore that and just be like, yes, and then just like smash the camera at the same time too.
Yeah, well, like I don't know, and obviously like these people are on with the problem is
like not even say anything, just like just what you're saying, smash the camera.
Yeah, what's also the problem with having a big bunch of guns around? Like, so guns are like important for revolutionary activity, right? Like, obviously. But the problem with, like, waving them around like that is that before, if you're, like, waving guns around before things, like, get, you know, real, let's just say, you look weak. Like, because you have them and you aren't using them. Like, you also, and you can't do anything but have the guns, right? So, like, and we've seen this at, like, protests with, like, the Oath Keepers or the 3%ers. You get in their face and they really can't, like, push back at you or do much, like,
They almost can do less because of the fact that they have guns on.
Like
their
if
backs.
You throw a bottle of, if you throw a bottle of whatever, like or a rock or a whatever at like an Oath Keeper,
it's not
shit,
like they're gonna shoot.
Not that I recommend, which I don't recommend. You know, it's a crime. But they're not gonna shoot you, and they're not gonna come at you either, right? Like they're not gonna get in a fist fight with you because they have a fucking AR-15. So they can't like you limit yourself. So you know,
I was going to say, it's basically in the sense of having something too powerful that you can't exactly use as a, you know, it's like, it's too powerful to use, so, you know, somebody will poke you with a stick anyway.
Yeah. The kind of problem with the protest is that they let the governor back down from, like, so, or not back down, it shouldn't, like, didn't put him in any position to do anything or not. They just let him kind of hold position. So the protest, the governor already made like these bills proposed, right? The governor says he's gonna sign them, and the House in Virginia is like all Democrat, whatever. They're gonna take away the guns or the ARs, whatever. So the problem was the protest. The governor can just do nothing, ignore it, or like say good job for our police keeping things safe. You need to put him in a position, right? So you gotta make him like do something to you or not. You can't just like say how peaceful you are. So there was actually like. I was in some groups, you know, it's easy to get into these groups for these protests. They're not very well vetted, which is like not a problem really. So for the protest, there was one part of the ground, there's this fenced in area for protests, and you could not bring a gun in there. And then outside that zone, you could like have a gun. So less people obviously went in that no gun zone, which also it was like illegal under the Virginia law to make a no gun zone, but that's beside the point. If they had tried to like try to bring firearms in that zone and like get forcibly stopped, like you have to make them make a point, right? You have to make them like violate your rights or arrest you just having a gun peacefully. Like you have to force your hand, right? These protests, if you let just come and go, like the civil rights obviously stuff like worked because if they had like a certain amount of northern media against the south, they had politicians on their side already. The kind of conservative media is focused like so much on being peaceful, they're not trying to push the issue. So you're not a civil rights guy if you're a gun guy, right? You gotta push the issue. And that's kind of a lesson we can draw from their kind of failure is that if you're doing a protest on an issue, you gotta like really force it. You have all these people together, or the pro-life people got like 250,000 people for their march recently or this past week. You gotta do a thing. Even if it's like, do a very minor civil disobedience. Obedience stuff is like kind of cringe.
Yeah, then the state doesn't see you as your problem anymore. They're like, oh, okay, they're just gonna yell and shout a little bit outside, and then who cares?
Yeah. Like, you can be ignored, you know?
Yeah. And you don't want that to... That's not the point of the protest. That's not the goal of a protest. Then at that point, it's just like a... It's just a shouting match, I guess.
Yeah, but also, like, a shouting match with an empty building. Like, the governor is not at the mansion. You're just yelling at the governor's mansion. It's pointless. So, there was a little bit of a psyop pulled on our poor gun friends. Not that they were never gonna, like, break the law or disobey the protest anyway. Like, I'm not saying this like, took the wind out their sails. But in the lead up to, they kind of got psyoped a little bit, which is like, you know, hey, we should be on the lookout for this stuff too as we get bigger and more effective. So the base, translated to Arabic as Al Qaeda, is a neo-Nazi terror group that no one's ever heard of. except for like,
what are they called exactly? The base.
The base. Is this, you know, is, like
oh,
like,
they're called Al Qaeda.
It's literally like Al Qaeda in English. It's the base. It's deeply cringe.
Okay. Wow.
But. So they had like six guys get arrested in the lead up. Three of them were said to be arrested like on the way to the thing. And like the charges they got them on were like, I don't know, I don't think they were like gonna do a terrorism. I think they were just going to do like the right wing thing. Because like the charges they arrested for were like, the ones on the way to the protest, they were harboring an illegal alien. Like there was some Canadian citizen with them.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh,
every time,
you know.
I hear about that, that's just so funny to me. Harboring an illegal alien right wingers,
yeah,
right?
Canadian.
And it's some Canadian.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. And the other ones are like more serious, I think.
I mean, dude, I see a lot of these people, like they have, they did a felony before, so now they can't own a weapon. And then they still own a weapon somehow. It's like, what? You know, that's like the easiest way to get yourself screwed.
Yeah. Well, and then the other two base guys that were wrapped up in the lead up to this thing, which obviously, like, the reason they picked these guys up was to, like, I think they were, like, plotting to murder, like, an Antifa of some kind in, like, in Georgia, which is, like, ooh, that's, like, oof,
wait,
you
wasn't
know, really.
Wait, that sounds like something, like, a Fed would say,
though. Well, yeah, that's the bit, right? We alluded to this earlier before we got on, that, like, so one of the guys, one of the three, was a Fed, and he was, like, apparently, according to the, they released some of the information. I'll link to it if I can find it again. He basically was like begging these kids. I think they were like both under 21. It was like a 19 and 18 year old. Like, and he was like begging them into, like calling them pussies and shit. Like, come on, you better, whatever. Like, which is like this
come
is
on,
bad
just,
behavior,
just
right?
Posters
if
me,
they,
bro. Just come
if
on.
They, no, well, if they join your group and then they think, and then like you're hanging out and they suggest to do it, if they suggest a terrorist thing, right? Or a terror, you know,
a highly illegal
law-breaking
yeah
and then you say no and they keep coming back to you and calling you a pussy for not joining in on their like their retarded thing, like they're probably a Fed. And
yeah,
and then it all comes out as I don't want to get like too conspiratorial, but there's a decent shot that this whole this this whole base, like, wrap up was, like, they were looking for an opportunity to wrap this up. Like, it hadn't got enough guys. Like, and obviously, like, conspiracy to murder, like, an Antifa and harboring illegal alien are not, like, big terrorism charges. Like, no FBI agency wrote on this bullshit. Like, this is, like, obviously it didn't pan out. Apparently this op's been going on for a while. It's run by an ex-Green Beret and, like, contractor out of Russia. What's his name? It was, like, he's a WOP, right? He's an Italian.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that.
Beginning in 2009, and as late as 2019, Nazero billed himself as an intelligence expert working with various government agencies. He was the principal of an LLC called Omega Solutions International, offering a wide range of intelligence and security contracting. Mm. Its website, removed from the internet sometime after August 2019, so like very recently, they killed the website of his other business, I guess. Most of the firm's experience conducting intelligence analysis for government agencies, military orgs, and private businesses, as well as access to a network of seasoned professionals with expertise in counterterrorism, counterinsurgency, homeland security, hostage rescue negotiations, psychological operations, and more.
But this is the advertisement. This is how you advertise like a
gay op, like Fed gay ops. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The firm also has a cage code, which is an administrative admin requirement for a military, for a contractor. So this guy apparently was some kind of contractor, Nazero. He's apparently in Russia now with his Russian wife, which is very also weird. And like, is he like trying to play into the whole like narrative of Russian interference? I don't want to get into that. That's kind of gay. So this terrorist group started by a Russian or American expat to Russia. That's like a white nationalist terrorist group. Obviously it's like, he's a Fed, obviously. It all went down. They took down. I think it's probably, it's definitely an expensive like FBI op to get more like white supremacists.
Yeah, right? I mean this is like a group that nobody's ever really heard of before. I'm not some expert in like right wing groups, but like most of them, you kind of like, oh yeah, this was like mentioned before. Like I think, what was it, Adam Waffen? I think was like the killed some. Yeah. Jewish guy or the homosexual guy, I can't remember. Like one of
them. Yeah, and then they also killed like one of them converted to Islam and like shot his two buddies.
Oh yeah, yeah, there was
that. That's an all time comedy bit, right? That's neo-Nazi roommates, one becomes a Muslim and shoots the other two. Like
yeah,
like, all time greatest bit. Yeah.
It's so bad. That's a lot of craziness right there. A little too much for me.
So like there was this basically the honeypot group, and they rolled them up at the same time as like this big 2A protest, which makes these guys, like the 2A boomers, even more like scared, and you know, they found even more black friends.
Yeah, yeah, no, they need more black friends. Hopefully it won't get them in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, very white. Ronaldo Nazero. Yeah, this dude's Italian. He's Nazaro, Russian now.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Italian. Ronaldo Nazaro. Nazaro
is a very, that's Italian. I've seen that as like, I think a singer almost might, and a famous Italian singer might have that last name. I don't know exactly.
Yeah. There's a weird like Russia far right thing, but it's not really in America. I mean, I guess this could be like this. I don't think this was like a Russian government thing. I think this was like our government kind of op, this whole base thing.
I mean, dude, is, like, it's very incompetent too. Like the whole thing sounds so. Yeah. Desperate at trying to find like, you know, I don't exactly think these right winger guys are the smartest, but I don't exactly think they're also that crazy. Well, except for the Adam Waffen guy, but that's like, that's like the biggest exception.
Like that's like, although Adam Waffen was pretty cringe. I don't know. I don't think Adam Waffen does seem too dumb to be like a honeypot or like a Fed thing. But if you're a pro tip, universal for us too, you know, if you're a terror group with a Discord server, you're not a good terror. You're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, but there is like kind of, I want to kind of bring up, kind of segue to us and stuff in Europe, because which also I think it can be informative to us, and I want to make a point at the end of it. So there is a kind of right wing connection from like the Putin government to like far right groups in Europe, not much of it in America, which I think the base was trying to like kind of play into a little bit. That it was like the first Russian, you know, push into the American far right, which I don't think it was. Probably, I think it was like Spencer, Dubinist, or whatever. So a lot of people, far right people in Europe, and I've heard like some left wingers during the Ukraine war, or the war in Ukraine, which is like still kind of semi ongoing. There were a lot of some far right guys went to fight on either side. Some far right guys went to fight on the Russian side. Some went to go fight against like on the EU faction of Ukraine. And I've heard that some communist factions were involved, like that weren't locals. I just want to but it was mostly fascists, and the fascists probably don't like this either. But things have kind of settled down, and like so East Ukraine is now effectively kind of a Russian protectorate, and West Ukraine is kind of like the EU aligned. And so, and in EU aligned Ukraine, they fought hard to defend their land and their people. And now they're doing land reform. And usually we think, oh, land reform, that's good. No, it's not. It's really fucking bad. It's the most like, land reform is generally think of like, oh, you know, you break up these massive aristocratic holdings into like a more kind of community farms or smaller units for individual yeoman farmers or some kind of land reform like that. So Ukraine has like yeoman farmers and community farms. And the people in Ukraine are generally poor. Ukraine's a poor country, but they do like own their land. And in Ukraine, it is illegal to sell, agricultural land. You can't sell it. Just full stop, not allowed to sell. Because they understand, they live there, they're part of they're right by Europe. And the fear, was that these European agricultural firms would come and just buy up all the land and leave these poor farmers who have nothing but their land destitute, right? Right?
Oh, like, shit. Yeah, no, I see where you're going with this.
So the new, Ukraine government, which is very, like, globalist, very capitalist, very, like, finance capital, heavy, they're gonna repeal this restriction. And you're gonna see massive, you know.
Oh, no, dude, there's going to be a bunch of, like, poor farmers, essentially, that are probably going to be desperate and going to just sell their land. And just going to be like, you know, maybe it's better if we move somewhere else or whatever, for whichever reason. Because like, Ukraine isn't exactly also in the best spot for stability either. So,
this plays into everything, dude. Like, so what's going to happen is these big capital firms are going to come in. They're going to buy a bunch of land. All these poor farmers are going to have a decent, like, nest egg, maybe, and they can either immigrate to the rest of Europe, where they, you know, they do the bit, where they, you know, do the fault of their own. They drive down wages in Europe.
Probably become an urbanite.
You know, they become an urbanite, but they drive down the cost of labor. There's more supply, so the price, you know, the price of labor drops. Or they go to the Ukrainian cities. They'll probably, same thing happens, right?
Yeah, I mean, they'll probably just end up going to Russia. I mean, this is a land reform for that's the entire country.
What's the, it's for the EU aligned west.
Okay, wow, that's really bad.
No, because they can't go to Russia, I assume, presumably. Historically, refugees from Ukraine go to Poland earlier in the conflict. But that's why I want to kind of point out, like, if you want, like, they're as a revolutionary and somebody who's like, I want to fight for the cause, and our cause is like, you know, it's national in our struggle, but the whole bit is like, you know, international. There's kind of this urge to go join, like, the Kurds fighting or any faction. I'm sure there were left-wing factions. I know for a fact on the Russian side, the Nazbol party, gang, sent, I think, like, 2,000 guys. And apparently did pretty well. I read a couple reports, one by them and one by a neutral actor, that there were some reconnaissance battalion, and they mix it up pretty good. I don't know, like, how they were, you know, they were effective for the conflict. I'm sure it wasn't, like, a very high bar. But the Nazbol party apparently, or what was left of it, they've been banned, obviously, in Russia, did fight. But part of that thing is, like, when you go and join a foreign conflict, well, A, you deprive your own country of a revolutionary. This is more, I think, like, they're going to the kind of guys who went to Kurdistan, which is, like, it's awesome.
There's only so many revolutionaries, right?
Yeah, like, and it is, like, cool. Like, it is, like, dude, I'm going to admit it. Like, I think it was 2015, right? I was following the Syrian war in 2015, like, pretty heavily. I wasn't, like, totally woke to our stuff yet. And then I was more woke in 2016, and I was like, I was in college, and I was like, oh, this college is gay. I got like, if I go to Kurdistan, they'll hand me an AK, and I can just go fight ISIS and go fight whatever. And, you know, I'm fighting for, it's like also kind of defensively, because like, oh, it's like for American interests, is like vaguely, so you're not like a terrorist.
I can see where you could have gotten that sentiment.
I was getting jazzed up, right? And then, like, some things changed, and I did some other stuff. But, like, also later on you find out, like, oh, the Kurds are just, like, a CIA, like, oh, that's, like, the whole thing is a CIA bit. Like,
yeah.
Oh, like, you know, you kind of realize that, like, oh, Assad is literally opposing, like, Assad's, like, opposing, like, U.S. imperialism, like, they're, like, directly opposing U.S. imperialism. And, like, this kind of very cool, like, anarcho-communist, whatever state is actually like, not do, like, they're doing some stuff that, like, maybe is very questionable with, like, Christians and, you know, other minorities there that aren't Kurdish. It's like, and like, oh, you know, maybe they're not, like, actually governed by an anarcho, like, council of anarchos. It's like literally a couple generals, like, which is not that I fault them for, like, a revolutionary army being run by generals and not, like, you know, the anarcho libertarian feminist commune or whatever they were pushing as in the West. But I realized it was like an op. They were saying, when they were crying about, like, oh, the Americans are pulling out, they were like another anchor for U.S. imperialism, you know? You kind of don't want to get caught up in any of those things, right? Because when you play geopolitics, like, especially if you're revolutionary, you're just you, right? You're not like a big complex of, you know, weapons producers and imperialists and, you know, oil.
Yeah, you don't have the power or influence to really change things around in the time being, in the moment.
Yeah. And even now, like, looking at it more, as I'm more of a kind of woke, like, even more woke, it's like, oh, I should go join Assad. It's like, no, getting killed, like, if I join Assad, like, it's also equally pointless, right? Like, now I can get branded as a terrorist, could get back into your own country. In 2020, this year, there's no, like, skills you can't learn on the internet. It's like, if you need to, like, learn some skills, you can self-teach. Yeah, like, I mean, go over there, you know?
Yeah, as compared to that. Real quick, to de-radicalize the podcast real quick, I wanted to go into a little story about what I just remember what happened to me in 2015 during the whole Syria conflict. While you were off, like, thinking about joining the Kurds and whatnot, I was
YPG? Lines of Rojava.
I was having a Syrian girl on Facebook message me. And basically wanting to marry me so she could come over here.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's yeah, my see. Entire involvement with the conflict. In terms, like, that's all I really remember of it. Like, I was like, hey, wait a minute. Like, I was like talking to her about something. I was like, wait a minute. Isn't there like a civil war going around there or something? And she's like, oh, yes, yes. Like, I can't remember what she told me, but she was like, oh, I remember seeing this plane come down recently. And I'm like, oh, that's neat. So sorry, but we can get back into
no, I appreciate your, you know, you had the better praxis there. Like, my idea was to go and, you know, find myself a war bride and, you know, my red pilled, you know, communist Kurdish GF. And you had him coming to you, so, you know, I appreciate.
Yeah, she could become another revolutionary here.
Yeah, you had the better hustle,
ding,
right?
Ding, bro.
Yeah, yeah. Look at me, like,
yeah, right.
You know, also, and I do want to point out, like, there's kind of this trend among revolutionaries and like leftists in general, like, oh, don't have kids, everything's so shitty. Don't have kids. Kids are expensive and whatever. And I don't have kids, so I do want a caveat there. But I do have friends who are in this thing who do have kids, and the. Great thing about kids is A, like, it's a reason to do your thing, right?
Yeah,
like,
you want a future for them.
Like, you can kind of
basically, like, you have more
if
of
you
a
like
investment.
You can, like, if you have no future, like, if you have no obligation to future generations, it's very easy. Like, because the current system is like you can be prosperous if you want to be prosperous. You can be very hedonistic if you want to be hedonistic. And like, if you're not having kids, like, you can very easily kind of talk yourself into, like, you know, fuck it, it's just my lifetime, right? But kids ties that. But also, like, the best way to make more revolutionaries is not to like. Yeah, you can, like, make all the, write all the books and all the pamphlets, but if you have a kid, if you can educate somebody from birth to be, like, you know, a better revolutionary than you, you kind of have a, you know, obligation. Like, you know, I promise you, like,
there's... Yeah, I mean, you're instilling the values of your own onto your children. And sometimes children are more radical than their parents.
Yeah, and I do want to say, like, I know guys who came up, like, it's with parents that are in this kind of stuff. They're not, like, weird or, like, homeschooled kids, like you meet homeschooled kids in public school, like, they know what they'll have some funny stories of, like, going to school and, like, saying something that, like, their parents said that was, like, not, you know, not widely accepted and getting, like, in an odd situation. But, like, they're well adjusted. They're on board. They know what's up. You know, and I wish we had more of them, you know. I know the kind of the majority of people, myself included, you too, kind of get red pilled as you come up. But, like, I would absolutely, like, if you're in this thing, do have kids. Maybe you can stop short of, like, going to Syria to find that a Kurdish GF, but that is an important part of, like, being a revolutionary is, I think, having an investment in the future and, you know, growing things up. You know, I do think revolution should happen in our lifetimes, but, like,
well, dude, it's like that one debate of, like, you know, who has more investment, the one that has nothing, or, you know, the one fighting for you know, his family and everything else because he has so much of an investment. Is that the Ryu versus Ken debate. I don't know where I hear that from, but or where I heard that from exactly.
No, I don't know. I don't know. The only fighting game I ever played was Deadliest Warrior 2, best fighting game ever made.
Yeah, but it's like it's kind of an interesting debate. But I personally go on the side of like, you know, if you have a family, if you have children, you know, if you have a lot of things, you know, kind of there, it keeps you just far enough away from like, you know, going full like martyrdom, I guess.
Yeah,
it's called
martyrdom. Yeah.
Versus like, you know, fighting for everything because like, you know, it's also for them.
Yeah,
it's a selfless act.
Yeah.
So it kind of means a lot more.
Yeah. Also, speaking of like being committed, right? I do think people with kids are obviously less likely to be like informants and stuff. And I do want to like, as you make an organization that's successful, people will try to put informants into it. It's kind of like a COINTELPRO has been around. Everybody knows about COINTELPRO. The FBI sabotaging groups they don't like. One big thing to know, like, especially if you're joining a group and something bad happens and you're considering becoming an informant, there's two big things. The FBI, if they have a case already against like you and your people, you'll already be in jail if they have a case. They get informants to make the case. If they tell you to become an informant to save yourself from the case, they're lying to you. You'd already be on trial. So they have no, that means they need you for the case, right? So they don't have a case. And two, if you do join up to be like their guy and they have no, like, they can't get any scouts for, you know, for the FBI, they'll just grab you because you won't be admitting to them what you are and what you believe in, and they'll get you some bullshit conspiracy charge. Like, absolutely, right? Like, if they tell you to, like, hey, go convince that guy to do X bad thing, and you fail, they still have you on mic saying, I'm going to do X bad thing, and you're going to trust the FBI to, like, not do anything bad with that?
To use that data against you.
Yeah, like, come on.
Yeah.
So, like, inform it, just, like, don't do it. We go deeper into CI contracts in the future, like, why not ever sign a CI contract?
Yeah, never trust the government or government operations.
Yeah.
I guess I would kind of question just about any of them.
Yeah. And I
don't exactly feel the need to have, like, you know, give them my blessing on like, oh, this is no, I'll make this go through the thought process instead of just like blankly like saying no.
Yeah.
Nah, no thank you.
Yeah. Like I said, like we talked about last episode, be like if the government talks to you, be like the fucking Viet Cong guy. Be confused and annoyed at everything they say. Just, I don't, what are you talking about? Go home. Leave me alone. Don't, no, just blank, give them nothing.
It's like, what are these ink blots? Get away from
me. Yeah, like, you know, your FBI, you're all perverts and weirdos, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And speaking of comrades that might betray us, I would like to welcome to the revolution two new comrades who will never betray us. Walmart and Goldman Sachs have joined the revolution. You know, great news.
Nice.
Walmart has been named Bloomberg's General Equality Index 2020 winner or something like that. They are, you know, they've really committed.
What is that? I never heard of it.
Well, have you heard of the Corporate Equality Index? It's like the stock market, but for lying to people. I'm sure there's mathematics involved, but Walmart got 100% score on the Corporate Equality Index.
Wow, really? In 100? I didn't even think.
Yeah, 100% equality on Walmart.
I didn't think there was a percentage.
Yep. Well, it'll destroy traditional structures of traditional small business or traditional everything, really, you know, and they'll pay you nothing and they'll destroy your union. But as they union bust your head into the ground, know that it's a trans woman beating you with a stick, you know? And that should make you deeply happy. So, congratulations, Walmart. Goldman Sachs also had, you know, joined the revolution.
I swear to God, this is like, it's amazing to me, like, what the big capital will really do with the entire neoliberal sort of lens through everything. Because, you know, they're essentially taking the minorities and women and then trans folk as basically like, oh yeah, we're just gonna use them, we're gonna put them at like a CEO status or something, but they'll just betray everybody else anyway because big capital.
Yeah, and it's not even like that. It's like, it's hard in like the perfect world of equality, like where people have this idea that under full communism, not this idea, like this is correct, under full communism things will be more equal around people, right? But the idea that like you couldn't achieve like that level of equality under like capitalism is like not true. Believe me, the class structure will remain. Like I guarantee you under capitalism, you could get a full 50-50 gender split, perfect racial division, perfect gender division. You know, everybody's got rights to respect it. No, everyone's like, but it'll still be like capitalism, right? Like these things will still be around. Like you'll just be beaten down by them, right? The idea that like, capitalism can't assimilate these things, like capitalism assimilated Bolshevism. If you think you can't be assimilated by capitalism, you're wrong.
It's,
you know,
it's a lot of these social things that are basically being simulated. They're not.
Yeah.
They're not real.
Yeah. And also, like, it's very transparent.
They're like a facade.
Yeah. So the other thing is Comrade Goldman Sachs is going to refuse any IPOs if all the company directors are white, straight men. An IPO is when a company that's not public is now sold in the stock market, and it takes an initial investment, a loan that Goldman usually gives.
Really? They have that sort of power?
Yeah.
I actually never knew this.
Well, when you do an IPO, you need somebody to front you the money, basically, like that you're going to get back when you sell in the stock market. It's going to have, like, it's basically kind of a, it's basically a loan that's paid back immediately, usually. Now, they usually do that, and for most companies, the companies that go public, because it's very profitable, and I'm sure that the only ones who can do it, they're one of the few banks that's got enough cash on hand to ever do it. But the big deal is that if the company directors are all white, straight men, they're not going to do it. But because they're so, like, transparent and shitty, they only apply this to Europe and America. They don't apply it to Asia. So if you're an Asian company and you're all straight Asian men, you're good to go. So it's literally just like a nothing to it, right? It's just so like transparently shitty and like not that it's actually it's not like a shitty policy. Like in theory, like I don't know if I was in some kind of bizarre national syndicalist situation, like you could maybe make something where you still have companies that have IPOs in some kind of communism or socialism, but and you might have this policy. Goldman's not doing this to achieve equality.
Yeah, no.
It's just so like it's just transparent bullshit.
It's amazing to me how like straightforward it is too. I don't really know any other way you could really view this.
Yeah, and I don't care. Like I'm never going to be like a company director of an IPO company. You know, it has an IPO ever, so I'm not worried like that. Oh, they're going to fire me to hire like a black girl or you know. It's just like this is obviously like
yeah. So
bullshit.
They can get this IPO.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not worried for me. I'm like saying I'm worried for like no. I don't think this fools anyone actually. I don't think anyone here is fooled, but I think there's a kind of person that like sees kind of like liberal type, kind of the Democratic Party voter, the kind of cat lady, you know, the Hillary Clinton type voter that it was never part of us, but like that gets like a good tummy feel from this. They get like they feel good about this, and that's
yeah.
That's and like them for being some happy, reason. Them being happy about it makes me want to counter signal it. Like I would just like let it fly, like oh whatever. But the worst, like
yeah, it's like yeah, because it's like at the same time, I don't care about those people getting those CEO positions anyway. Even if I couldn't do it, I'm not ever gonna be that. So whatever. But at the same time, it's like these other people that like I generally think are kind of a little cringe in general are getting like a sort of sensation out of it for some reason. I don't know why.
And then happy makes me mad. So that's why.
It's like, yeah, basically. I mean, dude, it's also like Goldman Sachs and Walmart, like the two, like these are such stereotypical companies. When I think of like big capital in general to be doing such a very obviously like fucking facade right in your face.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. It's like they're just giving us ammo. Like this is yeah. To me like oh, thank you guys. This is ammo for me to show any of my friends of why you should never trust these people.
Yeah. All right. So we
got, it's like
I was going to segue out of it, but you can go ahead if you got something.
No, not really. Okay. I was just going to say like I kind of wonder if this is I wonder if I could kind of like translate this to like coworkers or friends of mine, you know, my local area to kind of say like hey, like listen, look at this piece of news. Is that like, you really, I don't know, like, because they're conservative types, right? Because this is, you know, I'm, that's a lot of blue collar work stuff. They're very conservatives, gun loving sort of people. But they also really, like, generally just don't like random diversity.
Yeah. Yeah.
The most part.
I mean, it's kind of like a, you know, you do the woke capital thing, like that bit, like, oh, you know, this company, like, they, you know, like, hey, you know, white guy, they hate you too, right? Like, these companies, like, they see you as a thing to get rid of for, like, brownie points with, like, liberals. Like, I think you could, if you're trying to, like, I don't know, it's not too hard to cultivate hate in these big companies, like, at all. But you can say, hey.
Yeah, it really isn't, though.
Hey, like, you, like, because I know you're in, like, trades, like, hey, like, look, these people, like, they hate you, you know? Like, they see you as a thing, like,
if they could,
a tool to be rid of.
Yeah, yeah. If they could automate your trade, they would, yeah. Immediately, yeah. Just to get rid of you. Yeah. Like, wouldn't even do it for like some sort of profit.
Yeah. or even, and you can say like, hey, like, you know, if you, or like people, I, you can say also in a way that people are buying in and say like, hey, like you, like you're a big like business owner or whatever, like, or, you know, somebody has their own like business or, you know, small business or big business or whatever, or people want to be climbing the corporate ladder who's like a white guy or whatever, or say like, hey, you know, look, like they see you as a thing that's like, they'll get rid of for brownie points. Like maybe the system doesn't value you. Like maybe they're trying to destroy you. Like, maybe, or they just have no use for you, right? Like, don't be a cog in this machine. There's definitely an angle there to do at work. There's a there.
Yeah, there's always good chances with like, with trying to get the people really, really want, the common man, common person, to be woke.
Yeah. All right, so I just kind of want to transfer for like the last kind of 15 minutes, last quarter of the hour, to kind of, we kind of, our initial plan for the show was coming with some more like very sick things you can do now, right? Our things revolution our lifetimes and like how to get things started. So what we've kind of been doing before the show is that we have little groups of people kind of all over the country or a region, I guess. And what our job is, A, you know, you find people locally, you recruit them, you get them involved in the cause, but also you just like self-improve and prepare, and you want to like make yourself the best revolution possible. This is kind of where I wanted to go, is internally with your little, so if you're alone, this also applies. So if you don't have like a revolutionary crew with you yet, or this will help you get there, is part of this thing is that you have to be like, I know it's superficial and everything or whatever, but you have to be attractive and like cool. And that doesn't mean like, you know, you gotta dress a certain way or like, don't dress cool. Just dress like the people around you, right? Like you don't want to stand out in like a bizarre way. If you're going to work, you wear work clothes. If you're going to school, wear like what your school wear. If you're going to, you know, an office, you wear office clothes. But you should be like in good shape. You shouldn't like, you need to like improve yourself. You need to be kind of, you can have, if you, you know, be neat, clean shaven.
Like, don't try to stick out too much with like, yeah, don't try to stick out too much or be fashionable.
Yeah.
In the sort of like, in sort of New York and urbanite sense.
Yeah. But also,
because that's, I know like a lot of city folk will try to do that a lot. They'll try to, their sort of up talk is like through fashion.
Yeah.
It's through like, well, you know, we bought this, well, that, you know, literal capitalist shilling sort of thing. Yeah. Anyway. So,
but like, also like things like, don't be,
even if it is designer clothes.
Yeah. Also things like, so you got a beard, but like, you know, keep your teeth neat. Don't, and big one is like, don't be fat. Like, be actually, you have to, like, you should be working out. Your goal should be to be strong. And like both physically, like for like yourself and your own confidence and like your, and like fighting. Right. But like also people respect, like, in the culture we live in, people respect people who like are physically strong. Like even if people are, oh, he didn't, like, you get that weird like, oh, he worked too much, like, well, like meathead, he works out a lot. That's like not a real thing. People are like, people say that, but they're just like subconscious, right? You kind of gotta be the perfect man to be the revolutionary, right? You know, we kind of like touched on earlier last episode on like the mindset, just being like, you know, revolution first. And everything else kind of builds on that in your mind. Oh, you gotta apply it to the physical realm. You gotta be lifting weights, running. If you do get a crew, one thing I'd recommend is like some sparring or some kind of combat sport, because you want to get good. You want to be a dangerous guy or gal.
It's also like a good bonding simulation event.
Oh, absolutely right,
like,
that too.
You know, just general social events. It's like, you know, playing those sorts of physical like catch all games is, I don't know. Well, I mean, it should be pretty obvious what it does.
Yeah. Also, just bring some boxing gloves and like have it out a bit. Maybe one of you goes to a boxing class and shows everybody else like the drills and such. Like these things are good to like, you want to a get dangerous, right? You want to be dangerous. We need dangerous people for this thing. You also like, with things like fitness, you can tell who's committed to things, right? If your group has like a fitness goals and someone's just not meeting them, you think they're gonna like, you know, be able to like, hang with you when things get rough? Like, come on.
Yeah, like that's a funny thing is about fitness. You know, some of the more neolibs kind of see it as like a, oh, well, you know, we can just be a body type, whatever we want. But it's like, listen, like, the thing is too, is that like fitness has like a huge amount of dedication required to even consistently keep it up. And it's like, if you can't even, you know, kind of have that sort of dedication for your body, which would be your body would be for the revolution in general, then you couldn't, you know, who says like you're consistently thinking about it in your mind as well?
Yeah. And I thought I want people to be robots for this thing, like, but it should be kind of, if you're going to be like serious, if you're going to group people and this group has the goal of having it being part of the revolution, like, you owe it to them and also like the future people in the society you're going to hopefully do good for to be like all you can be. And if you can't like do 50 push-ups, you can't run like a sub 8 minute mile, like, I can't trust you too much, you know? And those are minimums. Those are like bare minimums, right? You know?
Yeah. Be like, physically fit.
Yeah. And like, and A, like,
sure. Yeah, I mean, okay, like the thing is too, is that, you know, there is also to an extent, like, it's understandable if you're more of like the brains of the crew or something. Cause you know, I've seen people that are like that. They're just, their time is more spent into heavy reading or like literature of sorts, or into like studying certain strategies of sorts too. Now, you know, I don't imagine those people to be exceptionally fit or some of the best or most stamina, but at the same time, you also kind of don't want them. You don't want to be that guy that's just like, you know, okay, yeah, you're the brains of it, but then you're just also very indulgent. You're a very big guy.
Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about, you know, but we're not going to call him out.
Be modest.
But, yeah, yeah. But also, like, the thing is,
I guess.
People are like, people like underestimate how in shape you can get in a short period of time.
Yeah, that's
like, you can get very deeply in shape.
It doesn't take that long.
Like, basic training in the Army, the U.S. Army, is like 10 weeks. And people come out of that in pretty good fighting shape, you know? Not great, but like good. Like, they're not all, you know, killers, but they can do the minimums, right? And that's what we're going to get. Like, you can get there. It's not too hard.
I mean, the thing is too, is that like, if you work a physical, if here's the great thing about being a proletariat is that, you know, since you do a physical job, like literally all day, every day, all the time, it's actually even easier for you to get like into shape once you kind of like, cause your body's already has the sort of stamina needed to require just
to
do that.
You have a base level. Like,
yeah. There's a base level to it. It might not be like, like, that's the thing, is it won't be ripped or something, but the moment you start doing, like, heavy lifting weights, like, in general, or, like, continuous running and marathon type stuff, like, your body almost immediately adapts to it pretty quickly. Yeah.
So, two things I want to point out. That is very true. One of the guys locally, never lifted touched a weight in his life. I think he was in his mid-20s, but he always did, like, kind of manual labor jobs, electrical work and shit. We have a guy who's an Olympic lifter. And he's just like, he's a smaller guy, but he's been doing it for a long time. And we got this electrician under the bar for bench press. That first time out, he puts up two plates.
Wow.
You know? Yeah. And he's like, you know, he's not like a huge guy either. He's like, you know, he was like, he's like 225-8, kind of chubby, but also, if you don't just say, I work mainly a labor job, I'm in shape. Like, test yourself. Like, hey, yeah, you work in construction. What's your 2 mile? What's your 1 mile? You know? Hey, you know, what do you actually bench press? What do you actually deadlift? You know, these are important things. How many push-ups can you do, right? These things are important. You know, they're good markers of physical fitness because they are, you know.
Like, yeah, and the thing is, it's
not now in terms of like,
and you know, like we were saying earlier, you know, it may seem like a little superficial, I guess, but at the same time, like, you know, okay, like we're the revolutionaries, right? But the normal people, you know, they're like the regular Joe, like the regular Sam, Samantha, you know, they're going to see a guy that's like, you know, pretty physically fit, also somewhat like in general in shape. His clothes aren't ragged or like weirdly fashionable or something like that. And like, he just generally looks like a very plain person. But at the same time, it's like then, like, you know, a revolutionary in any sense, you know, in his mind. So it's attractive to them. They like it. They like seeing that sort of thing because they can relate to it, I guess. Or it's something that they want to relate to. Because then the entire idea becomes more attractive to them as well.
Yeah. Like, charisma is important. Like, some people are not, some people can be fat. Like, I know some people who are, you know, very, very, who aren't our guys. They're very, you know, fat, but they're very kind of charismatic, and they can talk well. But I'm not saying it's impossible, but like, being fit and being like, having some self-confidence is part of convincing somebody of your thing, right? If you're the best example is like the fat fascists. Like, okay, how are you gonna impose fascism on me if you can't impose fascism on your fucking waistline, right?
Yeah.
The same thing. And as funny as that, and that's very true, like with the fat Nazis, it's also like, listen, that thought you have, believe me, it cuts both ways. Like, oh, you're gonna, you know, you're gonna smash the proletariat. Why don't you smash your fucking waistline, guy? Like, or sorry, oof.
Yeah, I was like,
smash the bourgeoisie. You're gonna like smash your waistline. Oh, wait,
it's
but
like,
yeah,
it's like so, rise yeah, up, rise up the proletariat. It's like, well, you know, you gotta rise up that calorie burning.
Yeah, a bunch of wives have had a bad guy. You know, it's like, brutal.
Yeah, don't worry about it. But yeah, it's like, it's hard to really like for us, it's like, obviously, we're kind of more on the, I guess, intellectual side of things. So our whole thing is...
I disagree.
Okay.
I mean, I think we're doing propaganda, not intellectual. We're doing propaganda, not intellectual stuff. Very different.
Yeah, no. I don't mean this podcast. I mean our mindset in general as compared to, like, aesthetic or something like that. Because, like, I mean...
You got pretty good aesthetics, guy.
I mean...
You got pretty good aesthetics.
Well, yeah. Well, listen, I like the communist aesthetics in general, too. I mean, like, you
no,
know...
No, I mean, you're pretty cut.
Oh, that's what you meant. Okay.
Yeah. I was impressed, like, physical aesthetic.
Oh, well, thanks, guy. Well, listen, like, I was actually going to go into art posting about, like, I guess 1930s, like, communist art, communist propaganda.
Oh, yeah, you don't look that good, but you look good.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, you know what? I was at one point thinking of getting, like, a, just a LARP, I guess. Like, basically, one of the old, like, private uniforms from the Soviet Union. That would be actually, like, I actually would probably look good in that. Not gonna lie.
Yeah, I mean, you look very,
I love that uniform in general.
You look very East of the Euro.
Oh, okay. Okay, guy. Thanks. You know, maybe some of my genetics came from East of the Urals, but you know, you don't gotta play it out that much. Okay. Either way,
Who do you pull for? Who do you pull for in the Russo-Japanese War? Who'd you pull for?
See, the thing is that, like,
there's no good answer to give here, actually, because they're, like, they're both monarchies, whatever. But, like,
yeah, I mean, it was under the Tsar, and then also the Japanese Empire, so it's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know which one. And also, like, most of the war was, like, over in the ocean. So, and I could care less about naval combat in general. I think it's so boring.
Yeah. What's the most famous disaster in Russian naval history? They lost, like, 6 million ships.
6 million?
And, you know, they were, like, ramming. No. But, yeah, no, the Russian naval, it was the biggest disaster in Russian naval history. They lost, on the way there, they lost, like, 4 ships due to, like, collisions and shit, and like they had target practice incident go wrong. They shot one of their ships. It was a whole clusterfuck. They had like mutinies. Ugh.
Yeah.
And then they got there and were destroyed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is that, like, you know, Russians can be competent, but sometimes they're just not. And it's usually hilarity ensues. It's like the sort of incompetence that you would see in like you would see like a bunch of like. Drunk people kind of literally drunk people like partake in, where it's like, you know, if you just paid attention a little bit more, you wouldn't have had anything go wrong.
You know, it's a good mix of like the kind of Asian like saving face and like the European like ambition.
Yeah,
and you combine those two things.
Listen, like, okay, we're not literally Hapas, okay. Like, Russians are not literally Hapas.
No, but you know what I mean. But you know, they have, like, that kind of face-saving culture a little bit. That, like, you know,
no,
about,
you know
right?
What?
Like, you
don't even know how much of that is, like, true. Because, like, that's, like, how my mother was all the time. My mother was basically, like, we were super poor and, like, just in America. And basically, she was, like, she didn't even want help from, like, the church. She didn't want help from anybody. Like, I had friends who were, like... They like their parents loved me and they would like want to feed me and whatnot. But like she was like, no, you do not take from other people. Okay, we will have to just buy food ourselves. And it was it was all to say.
When you combine that level of you combine that face saving with like the kind of more European like kind of ambition and like, you know, let's have a deep water navy and go fight this far, you know, let's build navy in so many years and then go fight across the let's circumnavigate like the whole world. And fight the Japanese, you know, and then the face didn't kind of hide some errors and hilarity ensues, you know.
Yeah.
Things are all nailed down.
Yeah, there's no easy route from, like, by ocean from West Russia to East Russia.
Yeah. You gotta get, like, the Black Sea Fleet to Vladivostok. It's gonna be a bit of a...
Yeah.
It would have been easier to put them on trains, probably, than what actually happened, though, so...
Yeah. If you had the trains built that big. Okay, well, anyway, We've actually hit an hour here, and I guess this is the real, well, technically this is real proletariat hours, but the hours is each episode. So
yeah,
so yeah, that's how
this is your proletariat hour.
Yeah, this is your real proletariat hour here. We're gonna be signing off here. Good talk today.
Tonight. Yeah, hopefully we'll have more of these coming out. Our audio issues have been fixed. Hopefully we'll get a little more better clip on these.
Definitely. The editing on last episode was very, very difficult, but you know, we pulled through anyway. Well,
yeah.
Have a nice night, everyone. Yeah. Signing off.
See ya.
War is a racket. It always has been. A racket is best described, I believe, as something that is not what it seems to the majority of the people. Only a small, inside group knows what it is about. It is conducted for the benefit of the very few at the expense of the very many. And during that period, I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and for the bankers. Out of war, nations acquire additional territory. If they are victorious, they just take it. This newly acquired territory promptly is exploited by the few, the selfsame few who wrung dollars out of blood and the war. In the World War, a mere handful garnered the profits of the conflict. At least 21,000 new millionaires and billionaires were made in the United States during the World War. How many of these war millionaires shouldered a rifle? How many of them dug a trench? How many of them knew what it meant to go hungry in a rat-infested dugout? Had to do for this munificent sum was to leave their dear ones behind, give up their jobs, lie in swampy trenches, and kill and kill and kill.